Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to Prospects to Pros, where we talk about the guys who are still in college, but they're headed to the draft, the guys who just got drafted, and everything in between. I'm Andy Staples. I'm here with The Athletic's draft guru, Dane Brugler. And we have a lot to get into, Dane, because we got rivalry week coming. We got Thanksgiving. We have food takes we got to get off. But more importantly, we got to talk about a game that probably affects the quarterback draft in 2023. Maybe not in the way that everybody thinks. There's an obvious piece of it, but there's a less obvious piece of it, too. And I talk about, of course, the Tennessee-South Carolina game, which was the shocker of the weekend. South Carolina clobbers Tennessee. Nobody saw it coming. The saddest part of that game is Hendon Hooker, the Tennessee quarterback, tearing his ACL. He's done for the season. Magical run for him after transferring from Virginia Tech, where he really helped turn around Tennessee's program and put them in a really great place going forward. But he's done in college football. The next time we see him will be in the NFL. What do we think happens with that, Dane? What, you know, obviously ACL injuries are not what they used to be. Right. 30 years ago, they were a career ender. But how does that affect Hendon Hooker in terms of the draft, what he can do before the draft, what he can show teams? Where is he going to be at these next few months?
As long as the surgery and the rehab go well, stays on schedule, I think that the injury itself is not going to necessarily hurt Hooker, hurt his grade, his draft grade. But, you know, it is a missed opportunity for him. When you think about the draft process and him unable to go to the Senior Bowl or Shrine Game and showcase his skills as a passer, because that's the biggest thing, I think, for the next step that teams want to see is Hendon Hooker outside of that Tennessee offense. When he's asked to maybe do some different things, throw some different routes, you'd be able to see that during Senior Bowl practices, but now that's just not an option for him. So I think it's a missed opportunity, and that's unfortunate. We look to past years with quarterbacks, Tua Tagovailoa, it was about this time, 3 years ago that he had that separated hip. That was a college career ender for him.
It's a catastrophic injury. That one was right. Was worse right. than Hooker one for sure.
And it's kept him from participating at the combine. That was the year COVID hit, so we didn't have pro days, but he wasn't able to work out before the draft anyways for teams like that. So, and he still went 5 overall. Now, obviously, we're talking about two different levels of prospects. Tua was expected to go that high, where with Hendon Hooker, he's more of a day two pick. So, yeah. But I think that, look just to last draft, Jameson Williams, which, an ACL injury matters a lot more for a speedy wide receiver like Jameson Williams. He had an ACL injury in January and he still went number 12 overall. So with Hendon Hooker, as long as the surgery goes right, the rehab goes right, he's going to wow during the interview process throughout the draft, the combine and the team meetings and things like that. I still think he's going to go on day two. But I do think it's a missed opportunity for him to potentially move up and help himself, missing out on some of these events.
Where do you think he falls in this quarterback class? Where would you slot him in?
Okay, well, I think the first three quarterbacks drafted are going to be Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, and Will Levis in whatever order it ends up being. Not confident that's the order. Some teams are going to be all in on Bryce Young. Some teams, the size is a non-starter for them. Will Levis is obviously a very volatile player because it's a projection is a big part of that. After those three, we have to see which underclassmen come out. Anthony Richardson, for as much as we have said, you know, 2024 class, and if he comes out, which is possible, you know, he might believe that he's done all he can do in Gainesville. If he decides to come out, he's still going to go top 50, top 60 somewhere.
This is such an interesting conversation because I get asked this question pretty much every day in Gainesville. And what I keep telling people is there's another facet to that question, and that is Florida sure they want him to be their starter next year?
I honestly, I'm not familiar with their depth chart. I mean, do they have someone that, you know, is...
Well, no, there's the transfer portal. Now, they have a freshman coming in well, Jaden Rashada, but I'm not projecting the freshman starting. I'm saying, do they go into the portal and get somebody else?
Well, they've got that Ohio State transfer too, right?
They have Jack Miller. They have Jack Miller. And then, you know, they have Jalen Kitna, who's been the backup this year. Miller probably would have been the backup, but he got hurt in camp and missed a lot of pretty important time. So Richardson, like, if you look at his stat line from the Vandy game, threw for 400 yards, and it's a decent completion percentage. He played very poorly in that game, though.
See, I mean, honestly, watching the Vanderbilt, watching that tape, he made some throws that made me go, okay, you know what? This guy, I can see why teams are really infatuated with what he could be, because he's making some throws that are just outstanding. Overall,
he has
maybe
the
wasn't the best
physical
game.
Tools of anybody.
Yeah. And you know, you look at the Utah game, you look at, you know, for parts of that Vandy game. I mean, I see it. I get why teams are going to be really interested. And I've got my first mock draft of the year coming out next week. So we know what we'll be talking about next week on the pod. And I'm looking at Anthony Richardson and saying, hey, could a team realistically, you know, bite on that talent late in the first if he comes out? It's something that is not crazy. So, back to the original, question and topic. You know, what does Anthony Richardson do? What's Tanner McKee do from Stanford, who has not had a great year, but the situation around him is makes it really tough to evaluate him. And then you've got, a guy like Bo Nix from Oregon, who has been a revelation this year and keeps going up and up and up. Very easily could see him drafted ahead of Hendon Hooker. So that's, it's seven quarterbacks right there that we could be talking about as top 75, top 80 picks. It's a really interesting mix of quarterbacks where last year we had one quarterback in the first 73 picks. This year, we've got plenty of question marks about these guys, but you could certainly understand why a team would, look at one of these and say, hey, yeah, let's roll the dice. But, you know, and again, we mentioned this before, one of the reasons teams did not take Malik Willis earlier or Desmond Ridder or the guys that were drafted in the third round last year, they were looking towards this class and saying, hey, you know, our advanced scouting tells us next year's quarterback class is going to be better. Could that happen again when you look at next year and what Caleb Williams is doing at USC, what Drake May is doing at North Carolina? There's some other really talented quarterbacks. Could advanced scouting tell some of these teams, hey, let's maybe not go all in on one of these quarterbacks. Maybe we wait. So there's still a lot of moving parts with this quarterback conversation that it makes it really interesting.
I want to ask you about another potential moving part because it's not something that we were even thinking about until Saturday night. Mm. Spencer Rattler is a third-year quarterback. He is draft eligible. He's the guy that we assumed was going to start for Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, that he was going to be kind of the heir apparent and the next great Lincoln Riley quarterback at Oklahoma. And then he winds up getting beat out by Caleb Williams. He gets pulled in the Texas game. Caleb Williams takes over, doesn't give it back up. Spencer Rattler then becomes the starter at South Carolina. Had a pretty pedestrian season up until Saturday night, when he looked like everything we ever thought he would be when he was a five-star recruit. This is a stat line. This is bananas. 30 of 37 for 438 yards and six touchdowns. That's an 11.8 yards per attempt average, 81.1% completion percentage.
I mean, and watching the game, it felt like that. As crazy as the numbers are, they're not too surprising when you watch that game and see him, how productive he was. using every part of the field. I mean, yeah, watching that game, you understand, okay, this is why he was a top five pick in mock drafts a year ago. You know, this is why, you know, we were maybe putting the cart before the horse with Spencer Rattler, because the talent is there.
He's a fourth-year player, by the way. I'm sorry, he redshirted at Oklahoma the first year. So he's a fourth-year player this year.
Right, and but, you see the arm talent. I mean, the guy, he has mobility. He can, if positive yardage is there, he'll take it. He can buy extra time. Quick delivery, the ball is up and gone with zip. So, and some of those deep balls, perfect accuracy. I mean, you're seeing him push the ball. But you know what? There's some of the character stuff is an issue. He rubs people the wrong way. That's something that could potentially hurt him through the process. But then just the, like, what do you do with a guy that, you watch earlier this year against Georgia, or watch earlier this year against Kentucky, where it
or
just...
Or the week before against South Carolina when he couldn't do anything.
Florida, right?
I mean, against Florida. Florida. Not, yeah.
What do you...
Crazy.
What do you do with a guy like... I mean, what's the... What is the draft grade for a guy like that? Like, yeah, I'd love to, bring him on my team. Let's see if we can develop him, but... Oh, I have to draft him in the third round? Oh, yeah, no thanks. Never mind. So, yeah, like,
remember,
what's the
Will Levis
price?
Will Levis got shut down by the same defense. That's just mind-blowing to me. 3 weeks earlier, Will Levis got shut down by that same defense. And then Spencer Rattler just goes crazy on it. And I have no idea what that all means, but it is fascinating to me. Yep. You talk about the moving parts, and I was thinking about this before we started the show, and you tweeted out earlier on Tuesday the draft order if the season ended today. One pick that I find very interesting is the one the Lions got, or one of the ones the Lions got in the Matthew Stafford trade from the Rams. Right now, that's number six. Yep. The Lions are clearly a team on the upswing. They've got Jared Goff. He's playing well. Do you use this pick? Because remember, they got the 2022 and 2023 first rounders from the Rams. So they don't have another Rams pick in case the Rams stink next year. The Lions don't look like they're going to stink next year. Do you use that pick on a quarterback now?
I think that's the idea, right? Is either that, or you use one of these picks to trade back and try to get a first rounder next year, where, you need to put yourself in position to go get a quarterback. I don't think that the Lions are... I don't think they have the belief that Jared Goff can lead them to a Super Bowl. I just don't think that they believe that. And so, he's been good right now, and I think he's helping them win football games, and that's great. But you have to think about the future, and, what is that going to look like at the quarterback position? So is there a quarterback this year that they love, that they feel like we can't pass on this guy? Let's bring him into our program. And, if there is that guy, they have to draft him. And, to your point, picking sixth, and then also right now they have the 13th pick.
Right.
If they wanted to package those picks to go get the guy they want, they could do that. Yep. If Bryce Young is, hey, that's our guy, we're worried about what some of these other teams might do. But, look at Houston. They have the first pick and the seventh pick right now, and we know they need a quarterback. So, what happens there? Carolina has the number two pick right now. They might not be interested in trading back because they want a quarterback, or, maybe they want one of these, Will Anderson, Jalen Carter, one of these impact defensive linemen. So it's a fascinating, a group of teams here in the early part of the draft, because multiple teams have multiple first round picks, top 15 picks, and they need a quarterback. So it really shakes things up, and it's going to make it, and especially because this quarterback class, it's not like 2 years ago where Trevor Lawrence was the easy number one pick, and then we knew quarterbacks were just going to fly off the board, whether it's Trey Lance or Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, five go in the top 15. This year, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Will Levis, I understand why each is liked as a prospect throughout the league, but they're not universally loved. And so how is that going to play out? It's not going to be where we see quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. I'll bet that quarterbacks will not go 1, 2, 3. It's going to be more spread out.
And even the ones who are universally loved don't always work. I mean, Zach Wilson may be getting benched in favor of Joe Flacco or Mike White.
Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a tough one.
It's a roll. It's a huge roll of the dice, no matter what. But you still have to do it because it's the most important position. And if you get that guy, if you get your Patrick Mahomes or your Josh Allen, then you're set for 15 years.
And it's a shame because you look at the Jets and, I mean, the run game has had their issues. You know, the wide receivers are a little up and down. But, you know, the defense is championship ready, you know, the way that they're playing.
Their roster is good. And the injuries they've had, once those guys, like next year, offensively, the roster's good outside of the quarterback. Like,
good enough to win a division and make some noise in the playoffs. There's no doubt. But the most important position, you have to hit on that. And so for some of these teams, it's going to be interesting if they love one of these quarterbacks. I don't think the Jets, you know, just said, well, we need a quarterback, so let's see if Zach Wilson works out. I think they genuinely loved him as a player. And look, this isn't a Jets problem. Zach Wilson was loved as a prospect by multiple teams.
This wasn't like a Mitch Trubisky situation where there was a split vote. Like, everybody liked Zach Wilson.
Yeah, great example. I mean, this was Zach Wilson was going to go number two if a lot of teams were picking at number two. It makes it interesting this year because, again, I don't think it's quarterbacks 1, 2, 3. I think it'd be a little more spread out. And our team's going to be willing to be patient like they were last year, or do they feel a little bit of, you know, the pressure that, hey, you know what, I'm not promised next year. Let's get our quarterback now and see what happens.
Yeah, it is going to be a fascinating set of circumstances because, like you said, because there's so many teams with a couple of picks there, like, we know the Texans are going to take a quarterback. Mm-hmm. It'd be crazy not to. But they also could take an impact defensive lineman, probably, or a corner, or, you know, they can fill another need. But the Lions, where they're at, may have to package that to get the quarterback they want if they want to do it now. And again, they're in a weird situation where things are going well. They can't stink next year, or they don't want to stink next year. So you're not really going to be in that class unless you get somebody to give you a pick for next year. And you got to hope that team stinks.
Yeah, there's still a lot of moving parts there. It makes it interesting. And look, and Houston at number one, they have the clear advantage right now. They have basically a 2-game lead for that number one overall pick. So
I'm sure their fans don't like to hear that.
I know. Well, hey, I don't think they had any illusions of grandeur. But so this was, I think they're in a position now where they're the clear overwhelming favorite to end up with that number one overall pick. And then it just comes down to, Nick Caserio, you know, coming over from the Patriots. We knew Bill Belichick ran things when he was in New England. This is his chance to, you know, put a stamp on things. You know, his first two drafts have been a little up and down. Some questionable picks. I think he's also hit on some. But you know, what is this his chance to go get the quarterback? And I'm fascinated to find that out.
Yeah, I can't wait. Now, speaking of the Lions, Aiden Hutchinson has been everything they wanted him to be this year. Interesting point about a game in college football that is very exciting because of the stakes of the game. The Big Ten East title is on the line. Essentially, the Big Ten title is on the line. A playoff berth could be on the line. Ohio State, Michigan. It's everything we want. Huge stakes. The weather could be an issue. It's exactly what you're hoping for at noon Eastern time on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. But Aiden Hutchinson was in the unique position for the last, I'd say, 15 years of this rivalry, where he was a Michigan player who was the best player on the field in this game. That has not happened very often. And I think it had a lot to do with what happened last year, where Michigan won in dominant fashion. Hutchinson and David Ojabo just destroyed C.J. Stroud in that game. Now, Michigan's offensive line also mashed Ohio State's defensive front pretty well. But now you go into a game where, if we're talking about who are the best players on the field, Marvin Harrison Jr. for Ohio State, the receiver, probably the best receiver in the country. They've got a couple of young guys on their defense that might fit this bill. C.J. Stroud is their quarterback. Who from Michigan do you think can make a big difference in this game?
I mean, besides the obvious, you know, Blake Corum, like, because I think that's, if Ohio State can, and we know the Ohio State defense is a lot better, right? I mean, compared to last year, it's night and day better.
Better than they were, yes.
So, you know, if they can limit Blake Corum, you know, we don't know how serious that knee injury is. You know, he came back in that game against Illinois last week, so it couldn't have been that serious. But now, you know,
well, he only carried one time. So
right, which is kind of weird. I mean, I don't. But you know, after a week, is it more sore? Maybe. I mean, who knows? We'll have to. That's an unknown variable at this point. But I mean, they still have a pretty good running back backfield, and that offense is made to run the football. And you know, our buddy Bruce Feldman had an article that came out today on The Athletic about you know, the Ohio State Michigan rivalry and some interesting insight from coaches talking about both teams. And you know, there was a part in there talking about how Michigan, knowing they couldn't out personnel or out talent Ohio State, they have
to be out culture and out physical.
Exactly. So basically out tough them. You know, be the tougher team, and it starts in the trenches. And that's what we saw last year, to your point. So can Ohio State answer the bell this year in the trenches? The defensive line is better this year for Ohio State. We saw that, you know, last week against Maryland, when Ohio State needed a play late in the game, Zach Harrison showed up with back-to-back sacks to basically end that game, close out that game. And that's what you're looking for at pass rusher. You want closers. And that's what Zach Harrison was. Can they do that in this game? You know, they have to be able to stop the run first and foremost, and then you have to force J.J. McCarthy to drop back and try to beat the Ohio State defense with his arm, which against Illinois, he missed some wide-open targets. He's a guy that has a little more juice in his arm, and so he will overshoot his targets at times.
Yeah.
Can they put enough pressure on him that really gets him off his game? And so I'm looking at JTT up front. I'm looking at Zach Harrison. Can they get that pass rush that Ohio State desperately needs? Michigan's got one of the best offensive lines in college football. You know, I'm a big fan of Ryan Hayes at left tackle. You know, what can he do against Harrison? And then, but again, I think it comes down to, can they stop Blake Corum? Lantham Ransom, Ohio State's safety, has been awesome down the stretch.
Yeah, he was all over the field against Maryland,
Special teams, defense. I mean, the speed is the difference with him. Once he sees it and goes, I mean, it's a lot of fun to watch. Tommy Eichenberg is going to be a big part of this game, attempting to shut down Blake Corum. So, you know, this is the type of game. And look, I'm biased. I grew up in Northeast Ohio. So, you know, I've got buddies who are Ohio State fans. I've got buddies who are Michigan fans. And so I grew up in this rivalry. That's why I think it's the best in sports. But you know, it never disappoints, you know, even when it seems like one team is clearly the favorite, it still turns out to be a good game. And I have, I'm sure this one will be exactly the same way. So, I think honestly, the key to this game might come down to CJ Stroud. And
I'm glad you went there. That's where I was going next.
Yeah. My biggest issue with CJ Stroud that I've talked about a ton is, can he be creative enough? And when he's forced to move his feet, can he be creative enough to move the football, move the chains? And, you know, because we know that Michigan defensive line, they're as good as Ohio State's tackles are, they're going to be able to get a little bit of pressure. And they have, I like DJ Turner at corner. Him going up against Marvin Harrison will be a lot of fun to watch from an evaluation standpoint. But can CJ Stroud make enough plays when he's forced to move his feet? From a scouting perspective, that's what I'm focused on. And just trying to figure out who's going to win this game. I think that's going to be a big, big part of, it's going to ultimately determine the scoreboard and the outcome.
I go back to the Penn State game, which is probably the best pass rush Ohio State has faced so far this season. And I got very worried about CJ Stroud because it didn't seem he sensed pressure very well. There were several plays where somebody was coming off the edge and he didn't even notice them. And it was interesting to contrast, because if you watched when Penn State got the ball, like JT Tuimoloau, who is a guy who's not draft eligible this year, but we will be talking about him a ton next year, was just terrorizing Penn State. And so what Penn State decided to do was slide their protection away from him so that everybody else is going to get blocked. And they told Sean Clifford, just deal with him. And Sean Clifford, who is not a prospect that we are talking about on this podcast,
right?
Most players are like, okay, I can duck under him. I can move my feet, get away, and get this pass out. I don't see CJ Stroud being able to do that.
Yeah. And that's why I have not been head over heels on Stroud as a prospect, because that's something that is maybe not essential, but pretty important to being a productive quarterback in today's NFL. It's something that you want, that mobility. Those second chance plays are so big, and he's done it a few times this year. I will give him credit. The Iowa game, there were a few games where he has done it, but not consistently. And so can he be consistent here when, you know, Mike Morris, who missed the Illinois game, it might have been just like, hey, let's just, you know, rest a week.
They warmed him up, and then they decided, nah, not today. So, yeah.
We don't, you know, is he 80%, closer to 100%? Who knows? We'll find out. But I think Mike Morris, who has, you're not going to replace Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo. It's just not going to happen. But Mike Morris has done a really nice job stepping in that role. I still believe he leads the team in tackles for loss and sacks.
Mm-hmm. He does.
And in the process, he's helped himself. I think he's put himself in that top 100 conversation. But, you know, can he put enough pressure on Stroud in that offense? When everything's in rhythm, that Ohio State offense is just, it's humming. And but it seems like every game there has been something that has maybe slowed them down a little bit. You know, whether it's, against Iowa, he took that sack that ended up being a scoop and score for the Hawkeyes. Against Penn State, they dug themselves into a hole early and some of the issues that you mentioned. Last week against Maryland, they struggled to stop Maryland. And we're keep waiting for Ohio State to play a complete game. And is this the week they could do it? I mean, we know that even though they're preparing for next week's opponent each week, they're always having their eye on Michigan and introducing different things. And so I'm really eager to see how that plays out. It's going to be a lot of fun. Noon on Saturday. From a fan perspective, from an evaluation perspective, there's going to be a lot to learn, a lot to take away from this game.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
The Athletic Football Show is sponsored by BetterHelp. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and to make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/maze today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MAYS.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Now, you got a packed weekend, though, for you, because you got the Egg Bowl Thursday night. You got Ole Miss and Mississippi State. That's going to be a fun one. I imagine Zach Evans is a guy you want to see for Ole Miss.
Ole Miss, a pair of 200-yard rushers last week against Arkansas, and they scored 27 points. How's that possible?
Well, if Arkansas hadn't taken its foot off the gas, they never would have gotten close to 27. Arkansas was destroying them. A lot of that is that Ole Miss defense is designed to get annihilated by a team like Arkansas. Like with KJ Jefferson and Rocket Sanders, that is not what you, because like go back to the Auburn game for Ole Miss. Robbie Ashford, now Tank Bigsby is a very talented back, but Robbie Ashford is not KJ Jefferson. And you saw them run all over Ole Miss. So you knew that these guys would be able to, and they just controlled everything. And so that was the biggest problem, I think. But now you've got the Mississippi State defense. You've got Emmanuel Forbes, who probably the best corner in this game. We get to see some Will Rogers. You know, air raid quarterback. But hey, there's an air raid quarterback who might be the best quarterback in the game right now in Patrick Mahomes. So you never know.
Well, anytime we get to see Jonathan Mingo, the Ole Miss receiver, go up against Emmanuel Forbes, that's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, Forbes set the college football record last week with a sixth career pick six, which is incredible. Awesome. He's a third year junior, and he's got 14 interceptions. So, like, he's a guy that
I think he had a pick six in his first career game. Like, he set the tone immediately.
He's a guy that he's not afraid to freelance. You know, it's a double-edged sword type of thing with him. And so he will have some rough points, but he gets his hands on the football. And obviously that does not go unnoticed by NFL teams. But how does he do against Jonathan Mingo? Jonathan Mingo is a really interesting player. He's a good-sized receiver, 220 pounds, strong hands. I was watching the Arkansas Ole Miss tape from Saturday to focus on Zach Evans. First play of the game, Mingo's running, I think it was a dig, and just a simple one-handed grab. Just put his hand out, ball stuck to it, brought it in. So Mingo, I could surprise people how much earlier he goes in the draft, because it feels like the talent's there, and it's just he hasn't been in an offense that has really been able to allow him to flourish. And so Mingo versus Forbes should be a lot of fun. And then, yeah, like you mentioned, Will Rogers, he's 0-2. In the Egg Bowl, so is Mike Leach, by the way. What can they do in this one to kind of change the outcome? Will Rogers will have an NFL decision to make after this year. I think he's in that Bailey Zappe type of mold in terms of, you know, strengths, weaknesses, and also draft projection where he could be drafted. This is something that you know that they want to come out with a victory, both the head coach and the quarterback.
So Friday, you got a few games. You can watch Drake May, who if you're thinking you want your team to tank for Drake next year, you can watch Drake May play against NC State. He had a not great game against Georgia Tech, where they got out to a 17-0 lead, and then Georgia Tech shut them down the rest of the way. Now, UNC should have won that game, because Drake May put the ball right on Josh Downs in the end zone. And
that was tough. Listen,
Josh Downs has made a lot of really good catches, so I'm not going to kill him for dropping one. But they would have won that game if he'd caught it. But you're going to get to see Drake May against a physically talented defense. NC State has not been what they were supposed to be this year. So, but you're going to get to see some numbers there. Florida and Florida State. You get to watch Anthony Richardson, who I think is just we talked about him earlier, but it's a mystery, because physically, in terms of quarterback tools, there's no one better in this draft, and there's no one better in next year's draft. And now Caleb Williams and Drake May are better quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Bryce Young is a better quarterback. CJ Stroud is a better quarterback. But if you take the individual parts of Anthony Richardson, it could all be put together into an incredible quarterback. It's just the question is, will that ever be put together?
Yeah, and you know, we talked about him earlier, so we won't, you know, belabor the point, but it's just I came away more optimistic with Anthony Richardson after watching Vanderbilt than you did. But I mean, it's still, you know, it's still Vanderbilt. I mean, one of the worst defenses in the country.
And they lost.
Exactly. It's a tough conversation with Anthony Richardson. There's a part of me that hopes he just goes back so he can get better. And it's not something we have to even worry about this year. But, it's who knows what the motivating factors are for these juniors. It's not just money. It's not just grades. It's not just having to go to school. Sometimes it's, maybe Anthony Richardson's just not gelling with the new coaching staff. Maybe he feels like, you know what, they've done all they've taken me as far as I can go. I need to go to that next level and take that next step.
He's an interesting case too, because in the NIL era, he's doing very well on that front.
Yeah.
So from a financial standpoint, he's much more comfortable than players would have been in the past having to make this decision. So does it affect, we don't know if it will affect people's decisions. We've not seen it because it's so new. So I'll be curious to see if that impacts the decision, because he could come back to Florida and be a seven-figure earner, not what he would make in the NFL, but also nothing to sneeze at. And potentially, because that's, I would imagine if Florida's coaching staff feels like there's more that they can get to in terms of his ceiling, that's what they're going to sell him on. They're going to sell him on, you're going to make plenty of money at Florida next year, but also you could make considerably more money as a draft prospect between, you could be like the 30, and obviously like the 31st pick and the 33rd pick are two very different things in terms of contract length and everything else. But the 31st pick and the first pick are also very different things, or the second pick or the fifth pick. Right. Like that's a lot of money that you could make. So it'll be a really interesting conversation that gets had here in the next few weeks. Now, Anybody from Florida State that you want to see?
I definitely want to see Jared Verse. They took a transfer pass rusher last year who ended up turning into a first round pick, Jermaine Johnson.
Yep.
I think there's a good chance they do it again with Verse. I mean, the way he's been playing, he was hurt a little bit, but watch him against Matthew Bergeron from Syracuse, who a lot of people like. I mean, he destroyed Bergeron. He's a guy that very easily could go in the first round this year. Fabian Lovett, the defensive tackle, anytime we get to see him versus Osiris Torrence,
big dude,
that'll be a lot of fun. And then I want to give a shout out to Trey Benson, the running back. I mean, he's a guy that Oregon transfer, the last month of the season, he has really showed up. I mean, he's averaging like over 120 yards rushing per game the last month. And he actually leads the country in terms of yards after contact this year. So just a big guy who can break tackles. Trey Benson's a redshirt sophomore, so could be a sneaky prospect that, if he were to declare, a guy we'll be talking more and more about.
Yeah, and the Jared Verse thing is so interesting. He was at Albany his first 2 years, and how that, I think we've told the origin story there, but basically everybody who played Syracuse last year watched the Syracuse-Albany tape, and Jared Verse popped off the screen. And all of those schools were calling about Jared Verse, and Florida State ended up getting him. But it is that, again, not the same thing. Jermaine Johnson was a role player at Georgia and had a big role in what turned out to be one of the best defenses in the history of college football, but wanted to show he was a three-down player. Very clearly showed that at Florida State, and it paid off in the draft.
Yep, exactly. And he wanted to be the man, and he bet on himself. And you love that when guys bet on themselves. And with Verse, it was interesting. The Syracuse game, that kind of really helped put him on the map. And then coming to Florida State, playing at Syracuse again. I mean, he terrorized the backfield for Syracuse. So he's a guy that has first round talent and speed, the power. He really has it all. I think he leads the ACC right now in tackles for loss with 14, and that's including missing some time because he's been hurt. So this is a guy that lives in the backfield.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Let's talk about Notre Dame-USC. This is another game, from a stakes standpoint, is huge, because if USC wins this game, then they will go to the Pac-12 championship game, probably with a chance to clinch a playoff berth. I'm convinced that if USC wins the next two, that Caleb Williams will win the Heisman Trophy, because he's basically carrying that team. And for them to win these next two games, he will have to be amazing. And he was amazing against UCLA. But who in this game do you really want to watch from a scouting standpoint?
Well, it's good to see Jordan Addison back to his old self against UCLA. Yeah. You know, he got hurt at the end of that Utah game and basically missed the next three games. So he had like 11 catches, 178 yards, against UCLA. So it's good to see him back and healthy. On defense for USC, Tuilagi Poloto, has been a really fun pass rusher for them. And then, Colorado transfer Mekhi Blackmon had a pick, against DTR last week. He's been their best player in the secondary, and I think he's going to be drafted at corner. For Notre Dame, I mean, remember what Dalton Kincaid did against that USC defense?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, he had like, the game of every tight end's life.
Yeah. Okay. So Michael Mayer's got to be sitting there licking his chops, saying, "Okay, what can I do now?" You know, we'll see if I don't know if he's going to put up that type of production, but it'll still be good to see Mayer face that defense, see if he can post some big numbers. Then we got to give a shout out to Isaiah Foskey, who passed Justin Tuck as the all-time sack leader for the Irish. You know, it's something that obviously matters. You know, the scouting motto is traits over production, but yeah, still, when you're getting sacks, that's that usually lines up that you're doing something right. And so Foskey's a little bit of a opinions are a little all over the place on him.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard everywhere from second to fourth round on Foskey. But he's a guy that puts pressure on the backfield. And so, you know, he's got a chance to, you know, make some noise in this one against a really good quarterback.
And he shows up in big games. Like, I just think there's a place for somebody like that. Maybe you don't draft him super high, but you get him in your locker room, get him on your team. He's going to make your team. He's going to be on your team for a while. The Michael Mayer thing is interesting to me. We haven't talked much about tight ends this year. Where does is he your clear number one tight end?
Probably. But I will say that, like, Michael Mayer, as good as he is, because he's just a damn good football player, like, he's not going to run a blazing 40. You know, it's not going
right.
to. And so that's something that could. That's why I wouldn't say Michael Mayer is a lock top 20, top 25 pick. Because he's
that's why I'm curious. Because, like, Darnell Washington from Georgia is going to wow people in testing.
But even Washington is, you know, he's still a work in progress as a receiver. You know, he's still, I mean, he's a freak, But, you know, he's not an easy projection because he's such a unicorn. You know, there's just you don't see Darnell Washington's walking down the street. He's very, very unique. And so that's an interesting one. And my guy, Tucker Kraft from South Dakota State, who did this week officially declare South Dakota State's still playing. They're still in the FCS playoffs. But he did officially declare and say that he's headed the NFL after the season. And look, when Dallas Goedert was drafted top 50, you thought, oh, wow, South Dakota State, you know, they're, it'll be a while before they have another tight end drafted top 50. Tucker Kraft could go first round. He's that good. Tucker Kraft is one of the best offensive players in this draft. A lot of people don't talk about it because they don't watch a lot of FCS football, but Kraft is the real deal. So I think you start with those three. And I tell you what, I really like this tight end class. You know, if those three guys that we, you know, Mayer, Darnell Washington, Tucker Kraft are all top 50 guys, soon after that, I love Luke Musgrave at Oregon State. If not for his knee injury, we'd be talking a lot more about him. Dalton Kincaid from Utah, who we mentioned. Cade Stover from Ohio State, I think, is in that day two discussion. And then we didn't mention him when we talked about South Carolina, but Jaheim Bell, playing a little H-back, you know, running back.
They made him a pure tailback the last 3 weeks just to force feed him the ball, essentially. They felt like he wasn't getting enough touches. Their two best backs were hurt, and they're like, here's the solution.
And he's a hybrid, you know, so he's unique. He's probably 6'2 and a half, 235 pounds. So, you know, what exactly is his role? But if he declares, he'll be another guy we're talking about. That doesn't include, you know, 5, 6, 7 more seniors that we could talk about as being top 4 round, top 5 round players. This tight end class, assuming all these underclassmen come out, it's going to be a sneaky good class with several players worthy of first round consideration.
And I like those hybrid guys that you're talking about, the ones who aren't, you know, the ones who are like 6'5 and above, obviously, you know what you're doing with them. But the ones who are a little bit more tweeners, there's a use for them, especially if they're very athletically gifted, because you can move them around. You can essentially play them as fullbacks, which allows you to change personnel packages without substituting. And so you can confuse the defense that way. And I think that you give them one picture, motion, and it's a very different picture all of a sudden if you've got a fullback now. So that's something I think people should consider.
Right. Well, and just with the tight end subject, I'm glad you brought this up because it's someone asked me this the other day, and it really made me think. Who is the last first-round tight end to live up to where they were drafted? So. Oh, gosh. We didn't have a first round tight end last year. The year before, we had Kyle Pitts, who, if we had a redraft, Kyle Pitts is still going top 10. Okay. But
yeah,
it's still early. He's now has the injury. He's got an MCL injury. So, up to this point, he has not lived up to being the fourth overall pick. After, you know, TJ Hockenson was just traded for the equivalent of basically a late second round pick. So, you know, as a top 10 guy, he hasn't necessarily lived up to it.
Noah Fant got traded.
Yep. Hayden Hurst, he did not last very long.
He's
with the Ravens.
Around. Yeah.
Yeah. The trivia question, who was the Ravens' first round pick before they drafted Lamar Jackson? Hayden Hurst, which is just kind of crazy.
Mark Andrews has been, now Mark Andrews is a great player at Oklahoma.
Yeah, like, but he was a third was round pick.
Exactly. So, and Isaiah Likely was a lower round pick who, if you watched Coastal Carolina last year, like, this guy's going to be awesome.
Right. Just talking about those first round guys, there have not been, it's hard. I mean, you go back to, David Njoku has been a good player. He got the contract. I think he's playing his best football now, but you know, that's still a questionable one, whether or not he's lived up to it. Eric Ebron, no. Tyler Eifert, maybe, but he was hurt so much. I mean, it's bottom line. It's tight end is a position that you better
Cole
be.
Cole Kmet?
Yeah, but he was a second rounder.
Yeah.
You better be wowed by a tight end and what he. It's almost like the running back conversation. You know, like it's you better be wowed. He better be that missing piece of your offense for you to draft him top 20, top 25.
Tank for Brock Bowers next year.
Well, yeah, exactly. And he'd be a good example of, okay, he's more in that Kyle Pitts conversation where he's just a complete freak which I was surprised. I didn't realize. I guess I should have, but I never realized that tight ends were eligible for the Biletnikoff Award. But tight ends have their own award. I thought it was just a receiver award, but I think with the blurring of, you know, tight end receiver and, you know, like Bowers being mostly in the slot, like, and he plays a lot of outside, it makes sense that tight ends would be considered for Biletnikoff. So I was just surprised to see that.
Yeah. And Bowers is also devastating on end around type plays.
Like, oh yeah.
He has one of George's longest rushes of the year.
Yeah.
So it's pretty crazy. Yeah. All right. Speaking of freaks, I have to bring up something that we touched on my podcast, the Andy Staples Show, earlier this week. So it was me and Ari Wasserman, who covers college football recruiting for us, and Scott Docterman, who covers Iowa for us. And we were drafting Thanksgiving sides, and things had gone pretty much according to plan. Like, you'd seen mashed potatoes and gravy come off the board. You'd seen sweet potato casserole. You'd seen the usual suspects had come off the board.
Okay.
Scott, who is native Midwesterner, has been in Iowa most of his life, with his fourth pick, selects cottage cheese.
What?
Have you ever had cottage cheese on your Thanksgiving spread? Like, as just something you put on your plate alongside the mashed potatoes and gravy, or the dressing / stuffing, or the...
turkey. I've never heard of that. I mean, I'm a Midwest guy. I'm an Ohio guy. I have never heard of cottage cheese as being a key part of a Thanksgiving meal. And I mean, I was actually just feeding cottage cheese my 1 year olds last night, and it kind of ruined my own meal having to do that. But hey, look, everyone's got their own traditions, their own, you know, and that's, you know, maybe something you grew up with, but that is not one that I've ever heard before.
The Heartland is a different place now. And that's what, you know, people are like, the Midwest is a pretty large area.
Yeah.
But Iowa and even where he is in Iowa, in Eastern Iowa, it's different than, like, Western Iowa is more like Nebraska. And like Nebraska, they have the chili and cinnamon rolls combination. That's not a Thanksgiving thing. That's an everyday thing. That's a school lunch thing. Like, they certain in Nebraska, in Western Iowa, and in parts of Kansas, like, that is a traditional school lunch, chili and cinnamon rolls. Like, you rip your cinnamon roll apart, you dip it in the chili. It's a strange thing, but it's actually delicious, by the way, if you try it. It's incredible. But so that area has some fairly unique traditions. And it's funny, because his fifth pick, he went with black olives. And I'm an avowed black olive lover. Like, I have black olives on my pizza all the time, but I have never heard of black olives. What I think is going on there with that, and we had some Iowans chime in and say, no, that's normal here.
Yeah.
I think they have kind of like the charcuterie board that you'd normally put out before a gathering, where you have your meats and your cheeses and your olives and all that. I think that is just part of the spread in their world.
Okay.
So it makes more sense when you look at it like that. But the cottage cheese thing is just like, I just burst out laughing. I was like, you did what? Excuse me?
That threw me. I did not expect that. It's what is the most unique thing that you have as part of your Thanksgiving meal that maybe is not unique to you, but unique to maybe what most people have?
I don't think we have anything unique. Like, I am asked to make mac and cheese for every family gathering. I stole a recipe from a place in Michigan. If you've ever been to Clarkston, Michigan, which is just north of where, you know, the Palace of Auburn Hills is, where the old Silver Dome was, it's past Detroit on I-75, but they have a restaurant called Clarkston Union. And then they also, that has a sister restaurant called Union Woodshop, which does barbecue, and they serve the best mac and cheese I've ever had in my life. And so I went and found the recipe on the internet, stole it, have been making it ever since. And so we do that. And I've had people say, well, that's not a normal Thanksgiving side. But in the South, it is. Like, in the South, mac and cheese is a side for every collard greens, I guess. That's a side for every occasion in the South.
Yeah.
Not just Thanksgiving or anything. But I would imagine in the Midwest and the West, that's not something people typically make.
Yeah, definitely a regional thing there. Is there a specific ingredient in the mac and cheese that makes it, that differentiates it from other mac and cheese?
So their version is the best because they use some local Michigan cheeses that are very hard to get. And I got them the first time I did it and did it right. Now the kids didn't want to eat it because it's not the cheeses they like. So I've made some concessions over the years, like to get the kids to, I get kind of more mass market cheeses that will work with their palates. But as they get older, I'm going to start special ordering the real stuff. Because again, if you taste it at the restaurant, it is one of the best things you'll ever eat in your life.
Oh, I believe it. Mac and cheese is, it's hard to go wrong. There's so many different ways to do it, but it's all good. How do you do your turkey? Is just traditional, in the oven? Do you fry it? Do you smoke it?
So I've done all of them. And okay. I still like the just roast turkey out of the oven the best. I like it if you brine it beforehand and then roast it.
Yeah.
So I am doing something different this year that I've never done before, because this is the first year that I'll get to be home the entire weekend after Thanksgiving, since I have no idea when. Normally I'm going to a game, but in this case, I just want to see everything. So I'm staying home. But my mother-in-law, who lives in town, we go to her house for Thanksgiving. So all the leftovers stay at her house. I want leftovers at my house. So I am going to cook a turkey on Wednesday that will live at my house and be my leftovers. So I'm gonna put that one on the pellet grill and roast it like I would in an oven. I'm gonna 350 and just roast it. And I'm excited about that because I haven't done a turkey in there yet, and I imagine it's gonna turn out pretty good.
Oh, I'd imagine. I've smoked a turkey before and it turned out pretty good. I don't understand. I think I feel bad for people that are really hate on the turkey for Thanksgiving, because it tells me that they haven't had someone fix them a really good turkey before. Because it is a hard thing to cook, because it's not forgiving at all. You know, some meats are very forgiving. Turkey is not. You could easily
dry it out in a hurry.
Very quickly.
I do think if you've got a good temperature probe. Mm-hmm. And don't get too fancy. Like, I've smoked them before. I've gone low and slow, like a 250, but that makes the skin all rubbery, and that's no fun either.
Yeah.
They've been cooking it in the oven for a long time, and it's been turning out great. There's a reason. Mm-hmm. It's really good that way. And so that's what I'm just going to sit there. I'm a cheater. I've got the app on my phone that connects to the temperature probe.
Oh,
so
heck yeah.
The second it hits 165, I'm pulling it. And I am ready to do that. And I will eat one leg immediately and one wing immediately. And then I'm saving the other ones.
I love it. No, that's great. And I mean, I know my family, they all love turkey. And so, we'll be at my in-laws for lunch. And then we go to my parents for dinner. So,
you get two Thanksgiving dinners.
Yes, it is. It is great. It is definitely one of the days I look forward to the most every single year, because it's the one day between that and Christmas Day. But there's the only two days between August 1st and May 1st that I will not work. I will just focus on food, family, and then taking in the football as a fan. And so I'm very much looking forward to Thursday and everything that comes with it.
It's going to be beautiful. And so if I get everything done and there's no weird coaching news on Wednesday, I will actually have Wednesday off as well. So Wednesday and Thursday will be glorious. And we might throw a little, maybe the first showing of Christmas Vacation happens on Wednesday.
Nice. We've already done it. We've been there. It's once November 1st hits, it's Christmas season here.
Yeah. We did that too. We took down our Halloween decorations and put up our Christmas decorations.
I'm staring at a Christmas tree right now in my office. So it's Christmas is a 2-month holiday for us, no doubt.
Yeah, my daughter got a Christmas tree for her room this year. So and she keeps adding different things. Like every time she and my wife go out, something else comes home that winds up going into her Christmas display in her room, which is so she is going to have Whoville in her room by the end of like the next 2 years. Well, I'm intrigued to see where it goes.
I'm excited because we My wife grew up with just fake trees, fake Christmas tree. And that's what we've done the last few years because
we still have. I can't talk them out of it. I'm trying.
Well, this year we're getting a real tree. And so I'm looking for, because to me that was Christmas growing up. You know, you go out to the Christmas tree farm and you know, you cut it down yourself. You do, you know, and I'm excited to take my kids this year to go cut down a tree, bring it home, drag it home. Hopefully it doesn't fly off the roof.
Lot of sap. I mean, lot of sap.
Exactly. I can't wait for that. It'll be, you know, that's the type of memories that I remember. And so I'm excited to give that to my kids.
Oh, that's, I can't wait. I want an entire Clark W. Griswold experience for your whole family, minus the going under the truck hauling logs. So don't do that.
Yeah.
So
right.
I can't wait. I just when you unfurl the tree and all the windows break and make it as close to Christmas vacation as you possibly can. Well, Dane, I think we need to get started enjoying all this food and football. I hope everybody else is going to do that. I hope you have a healthy, happy, and safe Thanksgiving. I hope if you're driving somewhere right now that we've helped you pass a little bit of the time and that you're being careful. Stop it and get some nice gas station coffee if you're tired. But thank you so much for listening. We love you guys. We appreciate you. We're thankful for you. And just enjoy this weekend because it's going to be amazing. We'll talk to you later.
This was the Athletic Football Show.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.